Hour number three, Dale and Keith, Sports Radio WEEI. Everybody back together again after the holiday break. And everybody happy to be back. Mutt and Callahan, we're here this morning with Dickerson. We're back in our normal spot.
The whole crew.
OMF will be in here at 2 o'clock with their normal place in the cosmos. A couple of things here, hot topics for the day. As you just heard during the award-winning Trending Now.
Thank you, Dale.
The Bruins won the Winter Classic yesterday at Notre Dame Stadium in front of 76,126 fans. Second largest group to ever see an NHL game in history.
Pretty good.
The only game that beat them was the 2014 Winter Classic, Maple Leafs and Red Wings, at the University of Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
Where they had 105,491. But the Bruins get a good performance from Tuukka Rask, and sort of hinted during the open there that
he's done. This is it for him.
I don't think he was saying exactly that. But they did real well both in the ratings. The overnight nationally was 1.94, best Winter Classic rating in 4 years, and a 17-18% increase over last year. Boston led all markets with a 7.9. Providence was second with a 6.5. Chicago was third with a 5.8.
Yeah, not surprising.
And the talk after the game was the Peaky Blinders outfits that the Bruins players all wore.
Yep, they're all very excited about that. They're ready to go for the next costume
party. I got to give credit where credit is due. They apparently talked about this in the offseason. The initial discussion began during the China trip, according to John Moore.
Yeah.
And then for Halloween, a bunch of the young players put on these outfits for a Halloween thing, and the veterans said,
good hats.
Hey, wait a minute.
Some solid hats.
Tory Krug reportedly came up with the tailor, who made
a
suits
fortune?
For everybody, made a fortune.
Yeah.
They all wore hats, except apparently Yaroslav Halak didn't get the memo.
Doesn't wear, he's not a hat guy.
He didn't
he's
have
not a hat,
hat
guy.
On, but the rest of them did, and everybody kind of liked how they looked. They took the coolest team picture ever.
Well, thank God they won, because all the conversation after the game was about how they looked, and if they lost, it'd be like, you can't talk about your Peaky Blinders.
Because
how many times have idiots worn stuff to games? And, like, Wizards?
Remember the Texans with the varsity jackets here?
Exactly. A great example. The varsity jackets. And then after the game, you look so stupid with your little Letterman jacket on your way out of a loss in the playoffs. There's been a lot of bad examples. The University of Miami did one. Did they do the one where they
wore fatigues? They did the camos. Yeah, camo fatigue thing. That
and then
was
they
bad.
Lost. Yeah, so there's a lot of bad examples.
Oh, the Bruins, A, you wear
won,
the cool-looking
so
outfits
it.
And the scally caps.
Yeah, you're all set.
And B, you win the game, so you get fine. To take the coolest team picture ever.
Right.
So that's all good. We've been talking about that. And obviously, the Patriots earn a bye with an expected win over the New York Jets. Todd Bowles was fired before the game, but then they made it official after the game.
Was allowed to coach the game.
So he was gone. And now the question becomes, after the bye week, as Bill told the team in the locker room afterwards, the video that Patriots.com released, by winning today, you assured that you win next week.
Right, I get
you're,
it.
You're gone.
They won
the next
wild card
round.
Weekend already.
Right.
That's
you're,
good.
Now you're on to the division round. You play a home game. Again, during the award-winning Trending Now,
that's right.
We heard moments ago, there are three possibilities.
That's right. There's three choices, Dale. You get the Houston Texans, which are the three seed. They won the AFC South. The Baltimore Ravens are the four seed. They won the AFC North. Or the best wild card team, that would be the Los Angeles Chargers.
You can't play, obviously,
Colts.
The Chiefs yet. And you can't
right.
play the Colts, because
right.
if they win, they go to Kansas City. So those are the three teams you could possibly play.
All pretty good teams, by the way.
Sure, like, yeah, you're in the playoffs, they're supposed to be, right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, how many times have they faced a team like the Tennessee Titans or previous versions of the Houston Texans? That divisional round, they've played some bad teams in the past. Or not very good teams, I should say. Like, clearly not contenders. This is a year where every team that made the playoffs in the AFC, I think, actually has a chance. So, which team, and so Tom Kern was just on with us, we disagree. I think the three teams, I think the toughest matchup would be the Ravens. I think the second toughest matchup would be the Chargers. And I actually think the best matchup for the Patriots would be the Texans, who they own. They dominate
the
Texans.
Well, they own the Texans. That is fair.
I don't think
Bill O'Brien's got to be going, please don't let me go to New England. Don't let me go to New England.
And DeAndre Hopkins was a guy, I think Tom also mentioned, who's one of the best receivers in the league. He's definitely on the short list, maybe one of the three or four best wide receivers in the NFL. He has not had great games against the Patriots. I think he's played them six times total, five regular season and one playoff game. He is 0 for 6, and he has not scored a touchdown. So to limit DeAndre Hopkins,
and you've got a guy who we've already decided is a Pro Bowl slash All Pro corner.
Right.
And Stephon Gilmore.
Right,
exactly. You already got that guy to help negate whatever.
And, I mean, he's a guy that you want to double team anyway. And especially now, they lose Will Fuller earlier in the season. Then they make the trade for Demaryius Thomas. He gets hurt. So that second receiver, they don't really have anymore. In years past, that was one of the issues that the Texans had. You face the Texans, they have an elite wide receiver, and then they have an elite pass rusher in J.J. Watt. And the Patriots, year after year, have done a good job at sort of neutralizing both of those guys on either side. I think just the whole thing about it, I would much rather them face Houston. So I'm hoping Houston beats the Colts, and then that would be the game a week from Sunday.
For me, the question is, which team has the best quarterback? You know, of the possible opponents, and I'm not knocking any of the quarterbacks here, but I think Phillip Rivers is having a really, really
good
year. He's
having a great year. Yeah.
His quarterback rating this regular season was 105.5. He was fifth in the league.
Right.
He had 26 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. If I look at which quarterback do I want to have to face in that playoff game, that's the question for me, is which guy. Now,
well, Lamar Jackson is the worst out of that group.
Yes.
But that's because Deshaun Watson and Phillip Rivers are both really good. Lamar Jackson's also a different type of quarterback. You have to plan a little bit differently for him.
They're pretty good at planning for quarterbacks who like to run around a lot.
They've had some success, certainly. I mean, they limited Josh Allen a couple of weeks ago. I just think that if we go back through it, and we can, they have lost to some terrible quarterbacks in the playoffs. Like, that hasn't always been the theme. Like, they lost to Mark Sanchez in the playoffs. They lost to the corpse of Peyton Manning when he was out there. Well, at that point he was.
I know.
They have lost to Joe Flacco in the playoffs. So that's not Nick Foles. Although Nick Foles, I can't figure him out. He got the Eagles back in the Super Bowl, so maybe he's a good quarterback, but he was their backup. But it's not like they have lost to just MVPs and you know, the top quarterbacks in the league. So a guy like Lamar Jackson almost fits the formula. And then when you combine him with, I think, the best head coach out of the three, you know, maybe Anthony Lynn's pretty good. I don't really know. But I think John Harbaugh's a better coach than Bill O'Brien. And certainly the Ravens' defense is better than Houston's or the Chargers. So I think the Ravens present the toughest challenge, although with the game being at home, I would still pick the Patriots in any of the three matchups. They're 8-0 at home this year. They've been a different team in Foxborough compared to anywhere else. So they're going to be the favorite in the game, and I'm going to take them. Like, I think they win that game. The question is, do they have to go to Kansas City the week after?
And Lee, setting that aside, because yeah, I think it's likely they would have to go to Kansas City. We're just trying to figure out. Look, you're in the playoffs. They're going to be good opponents. They're supposed to be good opponents. We understand that. Any of those three teams, Houston, the Chargers, or Baltimore, could theoretically come in here and knock you off. We understand. What's the easiest route? I don't want to play the Baltimore defense.
I don't either. I think Houston's the easiest. Even though they're the highest seed there, I just think the track record, the history that they have with them, I think they are. And they're a good team. That's why I don't think there's like a gimme, like where they've usually had. I think, you know, Shaughnessy always calls it the double bye, right? Like, you have your bye week, then you play a team that really doesn't deserve to be in the playoffs, or at least is not a true contender, and you always have that game at home, and then you win that one, and then you finally get a game in the AFC Championship game. So this year, to me, it doesn't feel like, and I know he wrote the article, and he's basically saying it's all the same, but this year's Houston, Baltimore, and Chargers teams are all better than, say, last year's Tennessee team, right? Who is who you faced in the divisional round. Same thing. And you smoked Tennessee. They didn't belong on the field. This year, I do feel like it's different. Not that they won't win, but it's not going to be over in the third quarter like it has been in the past.
So I look at defense. Baltimore scares me more. I look at quarterback. Rivers scares me the most. Of the three, Rivers is the guy I fear the most.
Yeah. I mean, Watson's great too, though. But yeah, maybe Rivers. I feel like there's a chance it could be Rivers' year. And the other thing with Rivers is, if you do face him, that means that they already went into Baltimore and won that game. So they got a road win in the playoffs out of the way. Plus, they were a really good road team. The Chargers were 7-1 on the road this year. So maybe that whole thing, oh, they got to fly East Coast. Like, yeah, maybe it doesn't matter. Like, they probably can handle that.
Baltimore is the team I least want to play. Second best scoring defense in the NFL this year,
yeah,
behind only Chicago. Chicago gave up 17.7 a game. Baltimore gave up 17.9. Rushing yards per game, Baltimore is fourth. Passing yards per game, Baltimore is fifth. That's the team I want to play the least here.
Yeah. Despite the quarterback, because I'm with you. I think they're the toughest team. Plus, they also, after their bye week, they went 6-1, and their only loss was an overtime game to Kansas City. That's pretty good. And these are games that they needed to win because they got themselves off to such a bad start. And oh, by the way, they make the transition from Joe Flacco to Lamar Jackson. So if it was Lamar Jackson all year, maybe they're not 10-6. Like, I wouldn't just look at their records. Oh, they needed to wait to the last day to get in. I wouldn't worry about that. They're a different team. Their defense is the best. They don't have a lot of playmakers on offense. You know, their receivers aren't great. They're kind of old and, you know, Snead and Crabtree, but they've gotten some good stuff out of that guy, Gus Edwards, who all of a sudden, with Lamar Jackson, they sort of put both those guys in the backfield, and they've been pretty effective for him.
Like, I understand that the general rule of thumb is a rookie quarterback playing here at Gillette, you want to face that guy. So you'd say Baltimore. But the Baltimore defense offsets that for me.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's good. And you know, the idea of the Patriots offense getting shut down, I agree with Kern. It feels like this year it's more likely than in years past. And then if you combine that with going up against the best defense in the conference, then, yeah, that could be a real kind of slugfest game.
Houston's scoring defense was tied for fourth in the league.
And so they're not bad by any means.
The Chargers' scoring defense was eighth in the league, one behind the Patriots.
And they had some injuries, too, throughout the year, the Chargers, yep, kind of off and on. So once they get a little bit more healthy, now is not necessarily what their season stats would say. So all three, it's not like the Chiefs' defense, let's say, is significantly worse than all three of the teams they may face in the divisional round.
617-779-7937. Dan is in Cranston. Hey, Dan.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
What's going on?
I'm glad the Patriots aren't playing the Colts. They started 1-5.
I hope you do play the Colts because it'll be here, and they will have knocked off Kansas
exactly
City.
Right.
Well, you're talking about quarterbacks, and I know they've had a good record against them, but the Colts started 1-5. That makes them 9-1. They're playing the best ball in the AFC right now. I think they can easily go in and beat Houston this weekend, which would mean then they go to Kansas City, right, Indianapolis?
Yep. Yeah.
Which is even better.
Right.
Which everything always works the Patriots' way, but Andrew Luck, to me, is the best quarterback in the AFC right now. I think he is better than Rivers, and I think he's playing better than anybody right now.
Even Mahomes? I'd take Mahomes over him, but I got you. I mean, overall, he's had a great year.
They're just playing really good. They're 9-1. They're playing the best football in December right now, and I think it goes. Nobody's really talking about that.
Andrew Luck, you know? His quarterback rating is 11th in the NFL for the year. He did throw 39 touchdown passes, but he also threw 15 interceptions.
Yeah, he got better as the year went on, I would say. They did have that stinker against Jacksonville. Their one loss in that stretch, they got shut out to Jacksonville, which was odd. But, yeah, I mean, they had to go on that run, and they did. Their defense, surprisingly, is pretty good, too, which I don't really understand. When you look at the roster, you're like, how is this team pretty good? But Frank Wright's done a nice job. You got to give him credit as the coach.
Indy's scoring defense is 10th in the league this year.
Yeah. But
they've
it's
given
turned
up
around.
21.5 points per game. Yeah, they were awful.
They shut
at the
out
start.
The Cowboys.
They were terrible at the
Remember,
start.
Like week 15 or whatever it was. Like that was a pretty impressive game. And Andrew Luck has been good. And they were winning games where, like that game, for example, against Dallas, they shut him out. They went 23-0. He doesn't even throw a touchdown pass, and yet he still played really well. Like he's had some good performances for him. He's looking more like the guy people expected.
617-779-7937. Mike's on the cell phone. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys, how you doing today?
Doing great.
Happy New Year. I wanted to touch on a couple
too.
Things.
Yes.
One of the things, when you were talking to Tom Curran about Brady's completion percentage being, what did you say, 18th in the league?
Yes.
You said 18th. I mean, you can blame some of that on him not being quite as sharp on every throw as consistently as he's been in years past. But I do want to also touch on the fact that I don't know, maybe it's just me, but it seems to me that over the course of this season, there have been quite a lot more blatant drops by receivers, Edelman in particular.
Boy, he has dropped a lot. I mean, relatively
Edelman
speaking.
Was right towards the top of the league, yeah.
Yeah, it just seems like he's just, you know, Brady's always counted on him. When he throws it to Edelman, it's a sure thing. The guy's going to catch it. He's probably going to get yards after the catch. Just hasn't seemed like that hasn't seemed like he's really got it together 100% this year since he's come back from suspension.
Well, it kind of goes back to Rich's point, too, about the quality of the weapons around Brady, which is not great. Gronk is a shadow of his former self. Edelman is nowhere near what we've seen in the past. He doesn't have Danny Amendola there to, as the clutch guy. He went away from Chris Hogan for a long time, went back to him this weekend finally.
It just seems like I just notice a lot that, you know, guys aren't getting open. And you know, maybe Hogan's lost a step, maybe Edelman's lost a step, and we can all tell that Gronk's lost at least a couple steps. I mean, I remember when Gronk could just, you know, space himself out from defenders regularly, and now it just seems like, well, even when he catches the ball, it's like he can't. It just looks like he's laboring with every step, you know. And you feel for the guy because he's put in everything, you know, effort wise that you could expect anybody to, and then some. But
he had that one long gainer on Sunday, and then they bring it back.
Right, of course.
Yeah. I mean, it's like there's been a lot of that too. You got to think about what would Sony Michel's total yardage for the season be if he hadn't been, I can't
it'd be like 1300 yards. I know you had a bunch of them. I know, that's a tough one but those ones are tough because on some of them you see the replay, and if the lineman didn't hold, then he would have gotten tackled for a two-yard gain or whatever, so those are tricky. But yeah, it does seem like a lot where you've seen Sony Michel, they like celebrating a run, then turns around, sees the flag, is like, ugh.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We are in agreement here. I know it would be better if we disagreed. We'd like to see Houston come here. And I think that there are pluses and minuses for every team, but overall, we think Houston would be the best matchup.
Hit us up on Twitter at Dale Keefe, WEEI. Now more of Dale Arnold and Rich Keefe on the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
We were talking about the missed incentives for Tom Brady.
Which were all of them.
All of them. He had to finish in the top five in passer rating to get a million. Finished 12th. Had to finish in the top five in completion percentage. Finished 18th.
Oof.
Had to finish in the top five in yards per attempt.
Which is dumb.
Finished
yards per attempt?
13th.
So you Scott Kazmaier?
Had to finish in the top five in touchdown passes, finished 10th. Had to finish in the top five in passing yards, finished 7th.
He 0 for 5.
So he wasn't really close in any of them.
Nope. Now, passing yards is the closest thing.
Gronk had four incentives at $1.1 million apiece. Nine touchdowns?
Nope. Did not get there.
70 passes? Nope.
Did not get there.
Receiving yards? Needed 1,085, got 682. Had to play in 80% of the snaps, played in 75. The receptions, he needed 70, got 47. Touchdown passes, he needed
nine,
got 3.
Yikes. Yeah, that is nowhere near a Gronk type of season. Not even close, you know, when you're looking at it. And he had the first game of the season, which was actually against the Houston Texans, which goes to show you how much both teams have really changed. Houston's significantly better now than they were in week one, and Gronk is nowhere near the player he was in week one. What do you go for, like 7 catches, 123 yards, and a touchdown? And you're like, oh man, he's going to get these incentives by week 8. That was pretty much it for him. And as far as games played are concerned, relatively healthy year. Gronk missed 3 games.
Right.
Last year he missed 2, and one of them was due to suspension. So on the Gronk scale, like, I know he played through injuries, but it's not like he missed half the season, or it's not like he missed 6 games. He only missed 3, but was nowhere near, as you go over the numbers, nowhere near any of the incentives.
By the way, and real quickly, as we get back to the calls, we were talking about whether Tom knows about some of the incentives for guys going into the game. Julian Edelman missed an incentive by one touchdown catch of $700,000. One more touchdown catch.
Yeah, he needed 2 going into the game, and he had 1, right?
One more touchdown catch earned him another $700,000. Now, these guys make a lot of money. I understand that. But $700,000 is a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
By any standard. Now, I was reading, I think it was Mike Reese who wrote this, that there are times when the Patriots have given bonuses to guys who are real close. For instance, Lawrence Guy played in 49.7% of the snaps. He needed 50%. to get a $400,000 bonus.
Well, they bench him at the end?
They have been known, according to Reese, when a guy is
that
right
close.
There,
yeah.
They just give it to him. They say, you know what, we're good. I wouldn't be surprised if Lawrence Guy got that one.
Yeah.
But what's the point of it then? What's the point of setting the incentive there?
You're not wrong.
Dante Hightower got a bonus of $250,000 if he played 75% of the snaps, played in 74.2.
Well, it also depends. I guess the last couple of games, like, all of a sudden, does their time start to change a little bit? Like, you don't want to, like, jerk the guys around.
And that did not seem to be the case, by the way. I mean, Hightower, well, he got hurt, shaken up there for a while Sunday.
I wasn't really keeping track of Lawrence Guy snaps, I'll be honest.
All 22s, you got to watch
them. Yeah, well, I wasn't. Not this year as much. I took a step back.
You need to get back in there.
Get back in there, break it down.
Get right back into the all 22 breakdown.
Get some X's and O's for you. James White needed 24 yards. Is that rushing yards or just total yards?
Total yards.
Oh, my God. For $250,000, he's going to be pissed. That's brutal.
See,
24 yards?
That's one where I could see them saying, you know what, for everything he's brought to the table, he's a captain, he's a leader, he did everything we ever asked him to do, we're going to give it to him. I could see them giving that to I could see Lawrence Guy and James White getting it. I don't see Julian Edelman.
I don't think they would.
Getting $700,000 for one touchdown catch.
No, because otherwise, like Rossi was saying, you just make it six. If you really wanted him to get it so bad, make it six, not seven. It's obviously going to be more difficult to get. And he didn't get it. And it's more money, too, on top of it.
A lot.
I think the Eagles, you know, the Nick Foles one.
Oh, yeah, Nick Foles needed 33% of the snaps for $1 million bonus, but he played in 32%.
They'll give it to him.
Yeah, he got him into the playoffs. Of course they're going to give it to him.
They'll give it to him.
He got hurt in the last game there, so they took him out. He needed three snaps, just played, to get that. So I think that's one that I can understand.
Yeah, they'll give him that one. And then Daniel Harris is the girl from Halloween 4.
Totally different. She probably has never sacked anybody.
No, probably not.
Well,
you got any news on that? So he missed a $500,000 bonus by half a sack. He needed 15, finished the year with 14.5.
By the way, he had 14.5 going into the last two games of the regular season.
Well, that kind of sums up the Vikings. They kind of fell apart
See,
there.
I would not give him because he had a chance to get a sack in either of the last two games.
Could have used it, too.
I could see the Patriots giving
those other
Lawrence
guys.
Guy and James White. I can see them saying, you know what, give it to them.
Yeah.
Not $700,000 to Julian Edelman.
Nope, sorry.
Probably not.
Sorry.
617-779-7937. Chris in Vermont. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how are you guys?
What's going on?
I ain't leaving $100 on the damn table.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm with you, Chris.
Hey, in the scenario that Houston comes to the Pat, what does it look like, and I like this, if Baltimore ends up in Kansas City?
Yeah.
I don't think Kansas City can beat them.
I mean, talk about contrasting styles, right? I mean, they did just beat them, though, right? Was it week 14, I think they played each other, and Kansas City beat them? Wasn't that the overtime game, I want to say?
Right.
But,
I think you're right.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the best offense versus the best defense, that could be a really fun matchup. Kansas City, I don't think it's a sure thing that they win their game, whether it's the Colts or the Ravens, or who knows, maybe even against the Chargers, right? I mean, if they have to play them again. I mean, they split with them during the regular season. So I think that there's no easy game this year, it feels like, in the AFC playoffs, where in years past there have been.
They're not the same team they were back in week 5 and 6, that's for sure.
Who's that, the Chiefs, you're saying?
The Chiefs, the Chiefs, absolutely. Absolutely. I think coaches have done a good job of figuring out Mahomes and the backyard stuff he plays.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He still threw 50 touchdowns for the season. I know the pace was really high. I think overall, so they had two losses late in the year. They lost by a point to the Chargers, and they lost by a touchdown in Seattle. Both really good teams, both playoff teams. Their losses all year have only been to really good teams because they also lost to the Rams and the Patriots. So it's really the opposite of what the Pats did this year, where they only lost to bad teams. They only lost to teams that missed the playoffs. The Chiefs, I still think that's an offense that can light you up. Even without Kareem Hunt, you know, Damian Williams has been pretty good. He's actually the third string running back because Spencer Ware missed so much time. So they've still been able to put up points. They still have Tyreek Hill. They still have Kelsey. So if the game is in Kansas City, I think the Patriots could be in trouble. But hopefully you get some help, and one of those teams playing this weekend goes in there and knocks them off.
So the only way the Ravens could go to Kansas City is obviously they'd have to beat the Texans They'd have to beat the Chargers, right. I should say.
And then the Texans have to win.
And the Ravens would have to beat the Colts.
Texans. We have to beat the Colts.
Yeah. I'm looking at yes.
So you'd need all the top, you need all the division winners
all the
to win, basically. Yeah, you need both wildcard teams to go home, and then that's what you'd get.
Then Houston comes here, Baltimore goes to Kansas City.
Yeah, because basically the only team the Patriots can't play is the Colts, and the only team the Chiefs can't play is the Texans. It's as simple as that. So like that wild card game, the 4-5 Ravens Chargers, either one could go to either place. It all depends on what happens in that 3-6 matchup.
617-779-7937. Brian's in Amherst. Hey, Brian.
Hey, how you doing? First time, long time.
Nice. Thank you.
I have a theory about Gronk, which I haven't heard many people talk about. I think when Gronk first started the TB12 system, he lost some weight, and he was doing the stretching exercises. Everything was great. And then I think he got too far in it as a strength athlete. He really needed to concentrate on strength training and, you know, eating meat, et cetera. And I think he just went too far down TB12, and that's why he's looking small and weak right now. You know, Brady, it works for Brady because Brady is thin. You know, he never really could have been accused of, he's never really been accused of being a athlete.
What kind of meat, so, you think? Just like steak? Or...
You know, I mean, chicken. I mean, I work with a lot of bodybuilders, and you know, I mean,
a lot of chicken. I think Tom Brady eats. Tom Brady eats stuff like that.
Brian, let me ask you this: have you ever, for the protein, eaten a horse?
No, I've never eaten a horse.
I heard there's more protein in it than beef.
There's more protein in
horse.
In horse, yeah.
I once ate raw horse.
I'm sorry. Japan. A raw horse?
Well, I had
right off
I
the,
had I had
right off the tracks
horse meat sashimi.
That's disgusting.
In Tokyo, it was awful.
That's disgusting.
It was just horrendous.
Ugh.
And there you go.
What do you think of the meat theory from the caller? Well,
I mean, Tom Brady does eat some things like chicken and fish, and
I'm sure
he's not a vegetarian.
No, he's not a vegan.
No.
That'd be tough to maintain, I feel like.
Yeah, I think we have this idea in our heads that, you know, that Brady has gone, you know, completely vegan or vegetarian.
Like people,
he doesn't do that.
I feel like people have brought that point up. Like Fourier, remember a couple of weeks ago, Fourier said Gronk's in the wrong weight room. That's what he said, essentially. And I think there's definitely some truth to that. Like what Brian was saying, maybe he went a little too far. And as a tight end, you do rely a lot on your physical strength. And maybe that got away from him. Also, this is his ninth year in the NFL, and he is a very physical player who's gone through a million different injuries.
And every time he gets tackled, it's by like five different guys.
I think it's just, that's it. I think the time has run out.
Follow Dale on Twitter, @DaleE Arnold. This is Dale and Keith on the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
You know, you can describe it in whatever ways you want to describe it, but there was a lack of communication there that can lead to thoughts and things of that nature that can go in many directions. The bottom line is that we were playing a significant game, and he didn't do a good enough job of communicating or being available in the hours leading up to that performance. So we needed to make decisions pertinent to getting prepared to play in that performance. So I've been really clear about outlining what transpired, the level of communication, and things of that nature. So obviously there's some things within that that you can infer, certainly.
So that's Mike Tomlin.
He uses a lot of words.
Yeah, a lot of words.
Is that John Farrell?
Coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who was doing his postseason press conference today, because they're out.
Yeah, they're done.
So part of the whole thing, as we've learned here, is that basically Antonio Brown went AWOL. According to Bob Rossi, who covers the Steelers... Not Jason Rossi.
Is that
Bob
your uncle?
Rossi.
Is that your uncle Bob?
Yes.
Out in Pittsburgh.
Senior writer
we're
for the,
close.
For the Athletic. Yeah. The Athletic Pittsburgh.
Nice.
He said Antonio Brown went AWOL from Friday to Sunday.
Okay, so those are some important days of the week for a football player.
Had his agent, Drew Rosenhaus.
Of course.
Call Mike Tomlin.
Yes.
On Sunday. And basically say, hey, he can go.
So the agent called the head coach and said, my guy's good to go.
And basically Tomlin said, that's not quite how it works here.
You know what? I don't like Tomlin. I don't think he's a very good coach, but you got to kind of take his side there. If the agent calls and like, my guy can play, he's like, what? I'm not dealing with you right now.
So while Tomlin was doing his 90-minute soliloquy today.
Oh, boy.
While this was going on, Antonio Brown was posting on Instagram.
Well, of course.
It said...
It is 2019 yes. after all, Dale.
He wrote, Happy New Year, be great. And then there's a picture of his smiling face.
Be great.
Giant smiling face.
Look at that. It's a nice picture of him.
And he writes, quote, My options may seem limited by people or circumstances. It is then that
Mike
I remind
Tomlin,
myself,
Ben Roethlisberger.
I am in command of my attitude.
Oh, great point. We all are.
I am divinely blessed with free will.
True.
I utilize that gift, choosing to take charge of my life.
Like that message?
To express the creativity,
good,
vitality,
smart,
and wholeness that truly define me.
Good message.
Talk about a lot of words.
You don't like that message? That's a strong message. I might get that tattooed on me. That seems like a nice, like for two, again, starting a new year here. You want to take advantage of your attitude, your free will, your creativity.
So it'll look good on your chest, I think.
Right across. Right
down. Yeah.
So evidently, while Tomlin was doing his press conference, one of the reporters said, hey,
yeah.
Antonio's posting on Instagram right now. He's asking Tomlin about it. And Tomlin said he's not bothered by that. It's okay.
No. They've had quite a year there, starting with Le'Veon Bell and then ending with Antonio Brown. Pretty amazing stuff.
On Instagram now, sending out messages while you're hosting a conference.
Yeah, social media and stuff like that is a part of our world today. I think I'm really consistent in here when I don't give it a lot of credence and I don't respond to it, you know. I understand it may be a part of your world and elements of it may be a part of your world when convenient. But I'm just not getting into that. I don't, man. I just got too much respect for this venue, this space, this profession, and the level in which we do it. I don't care about some of those things that may seemingly, when appropriate, be important, like social media and people's participation in it.
Good opportunity to say, I'm not on my face.
We're talking about the
he could have done that.
The guy
snapped.
Who's a player on his own team.
Yeah.
Facebook live a post game.
Same guy.
Locker room guy. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
We live. Same guy. That was
that
about
guy.
2 years
yeah.
ago. Yeah. Same thing. Same thing happened. Not worried about it. Yeah. They have really just lost complete control. And like, I'm not saying Antonio Brown has done everything right. He certainly hasn't. But Mike Tomlin, the Le'Veon Bell stuff is kind of out of his control. Like, that's a front office situation. But they've lost it. And for years and years, we've looked at the Steelers and said, they have so much talent. Why don't they win more? Like, they do win. They make the playoffs. Mike Tomlin actually has a Super Bowl to his resume. He does. But they have so much talent. How come they don't win more? And then, really, things are falling apart this year. They really are. Roethlisberger's not as good. Tomlin, did you think there was a chance at all that he might be fired?
Yes.
I thought so, too. After missing the playoffs... But he's still there. And then the way this thing is all handled, I mean...
I heard Damian Woody earlier today talking about this on ESPN, and he said, you know, it shows what a remarkable job Tomlin did. He's dealing with the Le'Veon Bell stuff. He's dealing with Antonio Brown stuff, and he still kept them in the run for a playoff spot until the last day. It's interesting because during his press conference today, Tomlin said there's a point where it's more problematic than useful. He was talking about Brown's behavior and whether or not it's worth having a supremely talented player. Most talented receiver in the NFL.
Right.
But there comes a point where having that guy around is almost more problematic than... It's more harm than good.
Now, we're talking about how the Patriots are one win away from their eighth straight conference finals. Now, that's impossible to compare to, right? Like, that's otherworldly. Nobody's really expecting that. But if you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers... After they lost the Super Bowl back in 2010, following that year, they lost in the wild card round. Then they missed the playoffs two straight years. Then they lost in the wild card round again. Then they lost in the divisional round. They got back to the conference championship game in 16, which they lost. Then they lost in the divisional round last year. And then they missed the playoffs this year.
So
since losing in the Super Bowl, they've only made the conference championship game once, and they've missed the playoffs three times. That's not very say. They've had the best wide receiver in the league. They've had the best running back for most of those years, not this year. And then they've had a competent top 10, maybe even peaking into top 5 quarterback at times. And yet they've only made one conference championship game over that stretch. That's not good enough.
So basically, Antonio Brown disappeared off the radar screen on Friday.
Yes.
I mean, that's when he
stopped
communicating with the team.
Well, there's the report about you know, he lost his mind in practice. Was it the Thursday practice? He lost his mind.
Yeah.
Everybody's saying it was probably at Roethlisberger. He may have thrown a ball at Roethlisberger, all this stuff. He lost his mind. Some of the other reports are that Brown thinks that Tomlin and Roethlisberger are, like, too much on the same side or whatever, and so Brown was getting frustrated with that.
So he disappears basically off the radar screen on Friday, yeah. And Mike Tomlin said he didn't hear anything from anybody until Sunday.
It became difficult to communicate and catch up with him. I wasn't able to communicate with him on Friday evening or Saturday morning. So when we had our Saturday morning mock game or walkthrough and he was unavailable and we hadn't communicated with him, then it became something altogether different. We decided to focus our energies on the guys that were working and prepared to work and present. And so those are the guys that we prepared to play in the football game. Woke up Sunday morning, got a call from his agent, Drew Rosenhaus. Drew expressed that he was feeling better and that he would potentially be able to participate. I outlined to Drew that decisions weren't made like that, but I would be interested in visiting with him in person at the stadium prior to the game, but playing wasn't on the menu. So Drew relayed that to him. I met with AB prior to the game. He asked what he could do. I said the best thing he could do in terms of helping us win the game is to be there and support his teammates. He agreed to do that. We had a general conversation about his overall health. I sent him to the training staff to visit with those guys who obviously were at the stadium readying people for play. And that was the last conversation that he and I had. I subsequently saw him in the bowl, in stadium, doing pregame warm-ups and things of that nature. But as the game began to unfold, obviously, I get occupied with the things that are at hand. I hear that he left the stadium. I don't confirm that.
Yeah, the report was he left at halftime. Because
right.
He was there.
And
shot
by
him
the way,
a fur coat.
I don't blame Tomlin for not knowing. I mean, he's got
other
things.
Oh, once the game starts?
Yeah, I mean, please. Once the game starts, he's got to worry about guys who are playing,
plenty
not some guy who's not playing.
No, I know. The whole thing was weird. Then Jason LaCanfora had the report that he asked to be traded, but did not demand to be traded. I guess there's a difference between, hey, I'd like to be traded, and you have to trade me. So I guess that's where it stands. I believe he has 2 years left on his current contract, something like that. He signed a 5-year deal a couple of seasons ago. So he still has years left on his deal, so they're going to have to figure something out.
Is there a situation where you can envision a trade of Antonio Brown?
Again, I'm not going to speculate in terms of things that I can envision. I'm just not.
I want to give you a little perspective. Bill Belichick did a press conference starting at about 12:15 earlier.
Right.
He talked for 11 minutes.
Well, he's in the playoffs, too.
But Tomlin started at 12, didn't get to the questioning. That was the first question. And that didn't start till almost after Belichick. So he went on for almost 25 minutes.
Just by himself?
Just laying it all out there.
For 25 minutes?
8 minutes was just about the final game against Cincinnati before he even got into the Antonio Brown situation.
Yeah, he's like trying to filibuster. And then they're like, no, we are going to ask you questions about Antonio Brown. We are going to get there. Who, by the way, he is the best receiver in the league.
I understand that, and I agree with you. And I know we've had this disagreement and discussion in the past. He is a supremely talented player. Is he worth it?
Yes.
Mike Tomlin right now is not so sure he is.
Yeah, well, they also missed the playoffs.
And he's had him.
They also missed the playoffs, and they're not using him even. I mean, they are using him. I shouldn't say that. I just think that they have so much talent that they have other issues on their team. He still put up great numbers. He still led the league in touchdowns. He had over 100 catches. He had close to 1,300 yards, and he missed a game. And you think about some of the numbers that these receivers are putting up this year, and he had the most touchdowns, and he missed a game. He has been awesome for 6 years or so. He's probably been the best guy in the entire league. He definitely is at fault for some of the stuff that went on. There's no doubt about it. But I just wonder, is that Mike Tomlin? Like, is that part of that? Don't you have to put that on him? Like, I know you're saying, well, Antonio Brown's a 30-year-old man. Like, you shouldn't have to babysit him. Well, you know what? Sometimes you do. Sometimes in sports, these incredible athletes, you do have to treat them a little bit differently, and you have to make sure that everybody's on the same page and ready to go. Something's going on with Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger.
Well,
it's very clear.
And let's see, because in fact, Ben Roethlisberger, and Lord knows he has been known to say some things on his radio program.
He's got the Ben Roethlisberger show.
And he talked about it.
What happened in practice on Wednesday that set this off?
Well, that's the kind of baffling thing to me is people are making a big deal about a walkthrough on Wednesday that there was a blow up, a fight between he and I. I don't know anything about that. If there was a blow up or something, I sure as heck didn't see it. You know, this big deal was made about that, and I'm not really sure where that comes from. You know, AB and I talked to AB on Thursday morning, cause after the walkthrough, AB left on Wednesday, and then, on Thursday morning, I talked to AB and everything was great and fine. And then, you know, this story just keeps growing. So, like I said, I consider AB one of my closest friends on the team, so I'm not really sure why. Or where some of this blow-up is coming from.
So you felt like everything was okay as of Thursday morning, right?
Absolutely. He and I talked, that's the last time I spoke with him. I've reached out to him numerous times. I've called him, texted him. I know other guys on the team have too, and haven't heard back from him. But Thursday morning, he and I talked, and there was no issue. So I'm not really sure.
Oh, never mind. Everything's fine. I thought there might be something wrong. Guess not. Guess nothing to see here.
Everybody's fine. All good.
I'm guessing that there's a big problem there. And I believe the reports, too, about I think Brown's getting really frustrated with Roethlisberger and with Tomlin, maybe the two of them together. I think, if anything, Roethlisberger, who did not have a great year, but can you imagine if you took Antonio Brown away from him, what his season would be like? Like Curran's point about, all right, give Brady some of these other receivers, or give him Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill and all these other players. What would his numbers look like? Can you imagine Ben Roethlisberger having to throw to, you know, Chris Hogan and Philip Dorsett and you know, Edelman and an injured Gronk and these guys? Like, Roethlisberger has it pretty good. So I don't know how that whole situation started. They've been teammates for a very long time now. Maybe it's just kind of all coming to a head.
I've never been a huge fan of Mike Tomlin as a head coach, and I've never understood why the Pittsburgh Steelers have stuck with him as long as they have, given the playoff performance that you delineated there. But I also kind of admire a little bit how he handled things on Sunday. Drew Rosenhaus calls, says, hey, my guy's ready to go, and he says, that's not how it works.
No, I want to talk to him,
but playing is not in the cards here. I kind of admire how he handled it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that you don't want to be taking orders from the agent, not right before a game like that. That's very odd. And I know Drew Rosenhaus probably thinks he owns the league because he's got most of the players and he's got a lot of sway. He does. But that's not the time for him to step in and be like, oh, my guy can play. Like, no, he can talk to us. And I don't know what happened there. I don't know if Tomlin reached out and Brown didn't return his calls, or I don't know how it all worked out. But
well,
I don't
need
Rosenhaus.
The way Tomlin put it, he said he became hard to communicate with. Yeah. Which indicates to me that he was trying to talk to Antonio Brown.
Yeah, and it just didn't work out, so they decided to bench him. And it was weird because
hitting that decline button on his iPhone.
Well, they're like, knee injury. Like, what knee injury? Did you see him in Week 16?
Tomlin
he was
also
insane.
Said there was no MRI done because he was asked about did he go for an MRI Friday. He said no, he didn't go for an MRI.
Week 16, so the week before the last game that he played, and I don't know if he hurt his knee in this game or not, he had 14 catches, 185 yards, and 2 touchdowns. And then they're like, oh, he's got a knee injury, might not play. I was like, what is going on here? And then Sunday, as things are going on, that's when more and more of the reporting started to come out about just how bad it's gotten there in Pittsburgh.